A reading from Nehemiah chapter 5, beginning at the first verse. Now the men and their wives raised a great outcry against their fellow Jews. Some were saying, "We and our sons and daughters are numerous. In order for us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain." Others were saying, "We are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during a famine." Still others were saying, "We have had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and vineyards. Although we are of the same flesh and blood as our fellow Jews, and through our children are as good as theirs, yet we have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. Some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but we are powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others." When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. I pondered them in my mind, then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, "You are charging your own people interest." So I called together a large meeting to deal with them and said, "As far as possible, we have bought back our fellow Jews who were sold to the Gentiles. Now you are selling your own people, only for them to be sold back to us." They kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. So I continued, "What you are doing is not right. Shouldn't you walk in the fear of our God to avoid the reproach of our Gentile enemies? I and my brothers and my men are also lending the people money and grain. But let us stop charging interest. Give back to them immediately their fields, vineyards, olive groves and houses, and also the interest you are charging them, 1% of the money, grain, new wine and olive oil." "We will give it back," they said, "and we will not demand anything more from them. We will do as you say." Then I summoned the priests and made the nobles and officials take an oath to do what they had promised. I also shook out the folds of my robe and said, "In this way may God shake out of their house and possessions anyone who does not keep this promise. So may such a person be shaken out and emptied." At this, the whole assembly said, "Amen," and praised the Lord. And the people did as they promised. Moreover, from the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, until his 32nd year, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allotted to the governor. But the earlier governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver from them in addition to food and wine. Their assistants also lorded it over the people. But out of reverence for God, I did not act like that. Instead, I devoted myself to the work on this wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We did not acquire any land. Furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table, as well as those who came to us from the surrounding nations. Each day, one ox, six choice sheep, and some poultry were prepared for me, and every 10 days, an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. In spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor, because the demands were heavy on these people. Remember me with favour, my God, for all I have done for these people.
The second reading is from Mark chapter 6, beginning at verse 1. Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. "Where did this man get these things?" they asked. "What's this wisdom that has been given him? What are these remarkable miracles he is performing? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us?" And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own home. He could not do any miracles there, except lay his hands on a few people who were ill and heal them. He was amazed at their lack of faith."
Thank you, Leon and Audrey. Long reading, but it's a good story, isn't it? "It's not fair." Have you ever heard somebody say that recently? Maybe you have, I don't know. Maybe it's a small person. Because human beings, we have an inbuilt sense of right and wrong, don't we? Even from early childhood. It's one of the indicators, I think, that we are created by a good God. He's put these instincts within us, instincts for truth, for beauty, for kindness, and indeed for what's fair and what's not fair. I was watching a TV program recently, Dr. Hannah Fry, presenting a program about gaming strategies, how to play games and win them. And in the game they played, the game's master offered her £100 in crisp banknotes, and she could decide how to split it between herself and a random passerby that they pulled off the street. And the passerby could then decide whether to accept the deal or reject it. And what she found was if she offered the passerby £40 while she took £60, most passers-by would say, "Yep, okay, I'll accept that." But if she offered them just £20 while she took £80, some of them would reject the deal entirely and nobody got anything as a result. And the passers-by, they saw that split as so unfair that they'd refuse even a free 20 quid that was offered to them. And what it showed was that we've got an inbuilt revulsion at unfairness, injustice. Even if there's a little something in it for us, we rebel, we reject unfairness. We may well say, "No, that is not fair and that's not right." Nehemiah here in the story that Leon read, Nehemiah shows good leadership, doesn't he? Not only does he play fair himself, he also stands up and sorts out the injustice. Politicians are widely criticised, aren't they, when they use their position for personal gain. We don't like to see that, do we? Somebody feathering their own nest. But we also want them to use their position for good. We want them to do good, don't we? To sort out, I don't know, the railways or universal credit or climate change or Brexit or whatever the issue is. I know these things are not easy, are they? I mean, they weren't easy for Nehemiah either. But we applaud a leader who at least makes the attempt. We want to see moral courage in our leaders, don't we? Let me ask you, what about you? It's very tempting, isn't it, to say, I'm not a politician, or I'm not a leader of nations or anything. I'm not in that league, you know, that's not me. But many of us are in positions of authority, aren't we? Maybe in our work or amongst our friends, in our family or with clubs and sports and so on. Almost every one of us has some sphere of influence, however modest it might be. First question, will we use our position for personal gain, grabbing money and goods and things for ourselves, or will we just play fair and take no more than is right and proper. In Jesus' day, soldiers and tax collectors were both renowned for abusing their power, taking extra for themselves by force. Jesus, when you think about it, Jesus had more power than anybody knew at the time. And he used it not for his own benefit, but to save others, actually at his own expense. So following him means not seeking personal gain, not just looking after ourselves. It actually means self-sacrifice for the sake of others. That was Jesus' character and example. But secondly, will we actually do the job? Will we actually deal with complaints, problems, injustices, unfairness? Will we use what power we have for good, sorting things out? Trouble is, that can be unpopular, can't it? You can make enemies that way. It may be much easier just to lie low, not look for trouble. But that's actually looking after our own interests, isn't it? We're not dealing with things responsibly when we lie low. So we need to pray for courage and strength of character to highlight wrongs and to find the appropriate way of putting them right. There's another aspect to this. In Matthew 18, Jesus gives his followers advice on how to complain in the first place. Because so often we don't. When something goes wrong, when somebody's hurt us, when a wrong is done to us, so often we keep quiet, don't we? The waitress asks, "How's your meal? Is everything okay?" "Oh, fine," we say, when we've just been grumbling away to those who are with us. Or we sit sullen at home. "Oh, if only she knew how much she'd hurt me." Jesus actually says in Matthew 18 that it's down to you, the hurt victim, to make the first move. Even if it's simply saying, "I feel hurt here." Otherwise, if we don't say anything, then 9 times out of 10, the other person will never, ever know. They'll be unaware that they've even caused a problem. But to get back to Nehemiah, what about when people complain about you? What about when they complain to you about injustice? Do you remember Desmond Tutu's Truth and Reconciliation Committee in South Africa? How they listened to the stories of those who had suffered. Or indeed the Grenfell Tower inquiry. It started with just listening to the people who were involved, the people who were the victims in that tower, to let the complaint be heard properly. In our second reading that Audrey read to us from Mark's Gospel, the accusations against Jesus are faithfully recorded by Jesus' followers. They might well have leapt to his defence, mightn't they, and silenced all the complainers, the accusers. But they at least record what was said in the gospel story. What are these people complaining about? Well, actually, nothing wrong, really, just familiarity. And familiarity breeds contempt. They're saying, "Hang on, we know this boy. He's nothing special, he's just like us." Wasn't really a complaint at all, was it? It was just familiarity. But still, it stopped them from following Jesus. It stopped them from having faith in him and in God. So hear the complaint, hear it out, and then pray, I think. Nehemiah was good at this. When you read the book of Nehemiah, he slips in prayers to God in the middle of his daily activities. In the middle of what he's hearing or what he's saying to others, he slips in a quick prayer to God as he does so. It's good practice, I think. Pray before you do things, pray while you're doing them, and pray afterwards about the consequences as well. And then I think when you've heard the complaint and prayed, consider your possible options. Because sometimes people just want to complain and be heard, don't they? They just want to get it off their chest and know that somebody has heard them. Sometimes it's worth feeding back to them what you've heard to check you've got it right and actually to reassure people that they've been listened to. And then maybe there's action to be taken. Maybe there are several possible actions. Maybe there are principles at stake that need to be upheld. You can at least say what you plan to do, even if you can't guarantee how others might respond as a result. Pray about that also. Jesus was amazed at his hometown, at their lack of faith, at the way that their familiarity with him bred contempt. And I'm sure he prayed about that. I'm sure he prayed that they would respond. But he couldn't control the outcome, even Jesus. Maybe you can do something, maybe you can't. But it's important, I think, to handle complaints well. Our news is full of organisations who find it difficult to handle complaints. I was reading this morning about a charity that had been criticised because they weren't responding to complaints about them. Perhaps we can think of banks or railways or airlines or whatever it may be, who find it very hard to handle complaints well. Injustice and unfairness make people angry, don't they? Nehemiah handled it well. And as a result, he helped the poor and he led his nation with fairness and justice. So let's follow his good example.